This edition of In the Studio is dedicated to Greg Allman. May God rest his soul. Lynyrd Skynyrd bass player Leon Wilkerson died in July 2001. This was his last radio interview. Huey Thomason passed away suddenly in September 2007, shortly after this interview. This edition of In the Studio is dedicated to them both.
To me, that was one of the best bands in the world. I mean, that original band was the best band in the world. The Allman Brothers Band. I mean, they could take on anybody in any kind of music and smoke them. All they had to do was be exposed to the Allman Brothers Band. Sweet home.
The way he sang from his guts and his, you know.
He had to out-sing Greg Allman, too.
Yeah, and he was trying to be a hard, powerful singer there. I guess Greg Allman and Paul Rodgers and Ray Charles and a lot of blues singers were his people that inspired him and his first heroes, I guess, in music. And he tried to sing like them, and it was real hard. And
to me, it was the Allman Brothers. Of course, they were up around Macon, but they actually formed in Jacksonville, kind of.
Yeah, Daytona.
With a group, Daytona and Jacksonville. It was like they broke the ice, you know, and started the whole Southern music scene, and it gave us the inspiration to go after it.
Hi, I'm Greg Allman.
And I'm Dickie Betts with the Allman Brothers Band.
And you're in the studio.
Hi, I'm Jerry Eubanks.
And I'm Doug Gray, and you're in the studio with the Marshall Tucker Band.
I'm Gary Rossington in the studio for Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Hi, I'm Henry Paul of the Outlaws.
Southern Rock Gold, Part 1.
Turns out that I wasn't the only one who was blown away by the two-disc, 36-song compilation called Southern Rock Gold. Listen to what Rob Theakston says on AllMusic.com, and I quote, "Much like jazz, Southern rock is interwoven into the fabric of 20th century American popular culture and is distinctly indigenous to American shores. As such, there have been countless anthologies and budget-line collections, loosely assembling a smattering of the sound and its rich diversity, but nothing like this. Southern Rock Gold isn't just an anthology, it's an anthropological and sociological document of some of the greatest rock music ever to come out of the American South, complete with a veritable who's who of the style." Theakston is on point here when he sums up, "Southern Rock Gold is one of the most enjoyable road maps ever assembled and paints a vivid portrait of such an important era in American pop music," end quote. Had the plane carrying Georgia soul singer Otis Redding and several members of his band not plunged into that Wisconsin lake in December 1967, it's highly unlikely that Redding's Macon, Georgia-based manager, Phil Walden, would have been actively looking to develop new, unknown bands in 1969. Otis Redding was poised to cross over from soul R&B to a wider mainstream audience at the time of his crash, evidenced by his Sitting on the Dock of the Bay going number one in America in early 1968. How ironic, then, that the Southern rock movement, so often connected with white, Dixie flag-waving good old boys, was actually born from the musical success and tragic death of a black American. Greg Allman had been lured to Los Angeles to write pop songs for others. Only 21, Greg had never been out of the South, and more importantly, had never been separated from his big brother, in-demand session guitarist Dwayne Allman, playing on Aretha Franklin sessions at Muscle Shoals, Alabama. Greg Allman was feeling about as forlorn as the singer in Sitting on the Dock of the Bay.
Just as I was about to lift a gun to my head, the phone rang. It was my brother. I'll never forget, it was March 23rd, 1969. I'll never forget it. There's my brother, and he said, "Man, I'm tired of being a robot down here." And he said, "I got to get back on the stage." And he said, "Dig it, I've found these four other guys." And I said, "Really, tell me about them." And he said, "Well, one of them's name's Dickie Betts. Plays an incredible lead guitar." And I didn't say anything, but I thought, "Well, what the hell are you going to do?" You know? And he said, "Well, I got two drummers." And I thought, "Man, he's really... really lost it now." And he said, "Then I got this guy named Oakley, killer bass player." And he said, what I need you to do, and this is probably the finest compliment I've ever had before or since. He said, they don't sing very much and they don't write hardly at all. So I need you to come out here and round this boy up and send it somewhere, you know. And I said, well, let me hang up the phone so I can get my thumb out, you know. So he sent me a plane ticket, and I put it in my back pocket and hitchhiked out there. Got a ride all the way from the San Bernardino Freeway to Jacksonville, Florida, from a guy who was a bass player who wanted a job. And we got there, and my brother says, thanks for bringing my little brother home. He slams the door in the guy's face. I've been away from my brother for 11 months. And during that time, he learned how to play slide guitar. I mean, he just was barely touching on it before. And he'd gotten real good. So I go in there, and there's two sets of traps set up, you know, two full sets of drums, and two lead guitar players and a bass player. And I'm thinking, God, this is either going to be real good or real bad. But knowing my brother, you know, I figured it was going to be good, but I didn't figure it was going to be that good. So they haul on their instruments, and they had that song Trouble No More, the old Muddy Waters song. And so there was no singer, so they just did the track to it, right? And they hand me the lyrics on the piece of paper, right? And I mean, it was so incredible. I got through with it, and I was just standing there dumbfounded. And I got my brother over to the side and I said, look, man, I'm not real sure if I can cut this or not, you know. You might want to look for somebody better than me. And he came all apart, you know. He said, you know, you little... After I told these guys all about you, you know, this is an earshot to them, right? And he, you know, said just the things that big brothers can, man, just enough to make me so mad. I snatched the words out of his hand. I said, count the damn thing off.
Sometimes I feel
Allman Brothers Band from their 1969 debut with Whippin' Post, included on the double CD Southern Rock Gold. That first Allman Brothers Band rehearsal turned out to be a major turning point for Greg Allman as a songwriter.
They asked me, well, what have you got written? So I had 22 songs with me. I started going through them, and they're all sitting around the room, you know, and I'd finish one, and they'd, yeah, well, what else have you got, you know? And it was getting up to the wire there, you know. I hadn't, I was sweating bullets. I thought, God, I've lost this job and got it in the same day. The last two songs I played for him were Dreams and It's Not My Cross to Bear. And with that, we rehearsed them, learned them around the spot, pow. The next day I wrote Whippin' Post and something else. I got really on a roll then. And because, you know, I had attained so much peace of mind. I was so glad to be out of L.A. and back with my own kind and what have you, that I couldn't find enough paper to write.
Next to the Allman Brothers Band, the group on the Capricorn Records label that was most successful and whose albums still hold several four-star ratings to this day is the Marshall Tucker Band from Spartanburg, South Carolina. Former Marshall Tucker Band reed player Jerry Eubanks is joined first by Marshall Tucker lead singer Doug Gray.
You know, we were the first band to take Lynyrd Skynyrd out on the road, and they opened shows for us all up in Hickory, North Carolina, and stuff like that. And with Charlie Daniels as well. That was because of the sense of responsibility we felt for acts that were new. Even Charlie wasn't new. Lynyrd Skynyrd had been playing around, but not on a national tour. Their first national tour, their record, we got to L.A., and their record was playing more than ours, you see. And so that was cool. And so then we started, and we switched it, and it didn't matter when it was from the Southern Boys, because we made the same amount of money. I remember in Charlotte, North Carolina, going up there, and Ronnie couldn't make it on stage one night. He'd gotten into the stuff real bad, and he couldn't get on stage. And so we went back after opening the show for them and played again. And played again shows with their band. And that just shows you the camaraderie of the whole bunch of guys. And, you know,
it was a family. It really was. Like, if we played with the brothers, some of us play with them, some of them play with us. We play with Skynyrd. The same thing happened. It was just each band would play their set, and then there'd be a gigantuous jam at the end of it. And you don't see that much anymore. Yeah,
no.
But I miss it because, I mean, it opened your eyes and opened your ears, because no matter how well you played your songs, you get on stage with another band, then it's going to be different, you know. And it made you think a little bit and made you be a better musician, I think.
It made you on your toes. You know, yeah. It said, this guy's going to be good. Instead of just word of mouth or hearing somebody on the record, you could go out there and say, okay, lay me something down, man. You know, this your time. Because that's what it was. We'd do Stormy Monday, and everybody had to play a jam. You found out real quick who was good and who wasn't, and who couldn't play together. Because being able to jam with other groups shows how multi-talented you are. Because you have to be on the safe side to, you know, it's one thing to be in your own group and nah, this way. But if you're jamming, you got to say, hey, you know, here's something.
Somebody says take it, you better be able to take it.
Or you don't,
I don't want it.
Or you don't get a chance to take it again.
What that one? you see what that woman she been doing to me? Can't you see? Oh, she's such a crazy lady. What that woman, what that woman she been doing to me? Can't you see? Lord, I can't stand to see what that woman she been doing to me. Can't you see? I'm gonna check a freight train. Can't you see? Down at the station. What that woman ain't never coming back.
Flute by Jerry Eubanks and the song and vocal by lead guitarist Toy Caldwell. That's the Marshall Tucker Band's Can't You See from their 1973 debut, now included on the double disc collection Southern Rock Gold. Next, Gary Rossington of Lynyrd Skynyrd plus Henry Paul of the Outlaws join me, Redbeard, in the studio for Southern Rock Gold Part 1. Lynyrd Skynyrd bass player Leon Wilkeson died in July 2001. This was his last radio interview. Huey Thomason passed away suddenly in September 2007, shortly after this interview. This edition of In the Studio is dedicated to them both. Welcome back in the studio for part one of Southern Rock Gold. I'm Red Beard. Along with Allman Brothers Band and the Marshall Tucker Band, the third colossus of Southern Rock, Lynyrd Skynyrd, came from humble beginnings, a carport on the south side of Jacksonville, Florida. Lynyrd Skynyrd has had at least a dozen members over the years, and as it turns out, about that many band names, even before they settled on that one, according to founding guitarist Gary Rossington and bass player the late Leon Wilkeson.
It was myself on guitar and Alan Collins and, of course, Ronnie Van Zandt, and then it was Bob Burns and Larry Johnstrom was the bass player, who's was 38 Special now. And Bob Burns, who is just no longer with us, he was actually our first drummer on the first couple records. And, you know, back in those early days, we were the pretty ones at that time, but then we changed it to Lynyrd Skynyrd after that, you know. But actually, there's one.
That was 1%.
Yeah, the 1%. One picture you have in here of us is the Noble Five, that little pirate picture, or that little. I call it the little fag picture, but you know, that young picture of us when we're kids, it's just terribly funny to me.
Partridge Family picture.
Yeah, the Partridge Family.
The breakthrough hit in 1974 from Lynyrd Skynyrd's second helping sophomore effort, it's front and center, of course, on the Southern Rock Gold compilation. Just how young were the members of Lynyrd Skynyrd when they first banded together, and why did the singer Ronnie Van Zant emerge clearly as both the musical and spiritual leader of the band? First, Gary Rossington, then the late Leon Wilkeson with the answers.
We joke about back then, I swear to God, Redbeard, me and Alan used to sing background vocals and oohs and ahs like the Beatles. We used to do Beatles songs and stuff, and our voice broke and changed, and we'd and it'd do like that, so we had to quit singing background vocals. That's how young we were. It was in between your voice changing, you know? Probably then, I guess, because he actually was older then, and we were teenagers, like I said, 15, 16. He was like 18 or 19 when that few years age difference in that area. I got teenagers now. It blows my mind. They're the age I'm talking about. But just those few years right there are really different, you know. I mean, it's between growing up and not quite grown up, and he was already grown up. He kind of taught us how to drive cars and taught us about chicks and stuff like that and just how to fight and everything. He was like our
self-defense
big
tactics.
Big brother or father image, you know, father figure. Yeah. And he was more mature, and it came out that way, I think. I think just the want and the know-how and just the gut, the way he sang from his guts and his, you know.
He had to out-sing Greg Allman, too.
Yeah, and he was trying to be a hard, powerful singer there. I guess Greg Allman and Paul Rodgers and Ray Charles and a lot of blues singers were his, you know, people that inspired him and his first heroes, I guess, in music. And he tried to sing like them, and it was real hard, and, you know, it already sounded rough.
To me, it was the Allman Brothers. Of course, they were up around Macon, but they actually formed in Jacksonville, kind of.
Yeah, Daytona
with
and
a
Jacksonville.
Group, Daytona and Jacksonville.
They used to play at all the B-ins and all the love-ins and B-ins in Jacksonville, and we used to go see them and met them. And
it was like they broke the ice, you know, and started the whole Southern music scene, and it gave us the inspiration to go after it.
With both the Allman Brothers Band and Lynyrd Skynyrd exploding out of North Florida in the early 1970s, it was no surprise that the region's musical scene was energized. Here's the Outlaws, Henry Paul, followed by the late Huey Thomason.
I'd moved to New York and was working up there, and had put a band together and came down to Florida with it, and Monty Yoho, who had been playing with Huey, was available, and he had joined that group. And eventually the bass player from that group left, and we included Frank O'Keefe into the band. And when the band finally did break up, Huey had moved back to town, and he and Monty and Frank and I kind of formed a group that would eventually become the Outlaws again. And Billy Jones was in Colorado playing in a band out there, and he moved home, and that was, you know, the original lineup from the recorded record standpoint. And we just went out and started playing clubs and really kind of paid our dues on a local and then a regional level, and eventually we met people like Ronnie Van Zant and people that would sing our praises and help us gain notoriety and recognition, and eventually that led to our record deal with Aristotle.
They also put us on shows with them, so we had a chance to be in front of a crowd and play our music for them too, so they were very helpful, all those guys.
I have never heard how Clive Davis, who had just left Columbia Records after signing Janis Joplin, Simon and Garfunkel, Santana, and Bruce Springsteen, then he goes to start his own label, Arista, how he decided on a 3-lead guitar Southern rock band from Tampa, Florida, to be his first signing. You got to tell me that story.
I think that, you know, the advent of Southern rock is a phenomena, you know, that the Allman Brothers were on one label, Marshall Tucker being on that label, Lynyrd Skynyrd was on another label, and I think that they came and saw the band. They saw how, you know, professional we were with our performance and how energetic the band was and how, you know, we had musicianship and performing skills, and we really sold it live. We just were relentless in our pursuit of the audience's affection, and I think he sensed, you know, our potential, and given that Southern rock at that time was just emerging as a significant commercial musical entity, I think he wanted one of those for his stable. So, Being in the right place at the right time with the right kind of band was very instrumental in our signing, I think.
We also, we had opened for Lynyrd Skynyrd. He came to see us. We had met Ronnie and the guys at Mother's in Nashville, played a show with them, and that's where we first met. And we jammed together the first time we met and played together and got to become friends. And so we were on the show playing with them when Clive came to see us. So we got to play in front of a Skynyrd crowd, open for Skynyrd, and, you know, Clive liked what he saw, like Henry said, and we went from there. So Ronnie actually did have something to do with it in a roundabout way.
Sometimes I feel I am getting kind of low. Thoughts I am thinking are the reason, so I try to remember without talking to myself things that I've said or maybe things that I felt about you. Sitting in a corner of a crowded ballroom, people all around me and I still feel alone. Just when I know I'm gonna break down and cry, someone played a tune that dried the tear from my eye.
There goes another love song, someone singing about me again. There goes another love song, now I need more than a friend. Far from my home, trying to get back to where I know I belong. Wish and a hope that I was already there. I just heard a voice that whispered in my ear singing,
there goes another love song, someone singing about me again. There goes another love song, now I need more than a friend.
Originally on their 1975 rookie release, that's written and sung by the late Huey Thomason on the Outlaws' 1975 debut with There Goes Another Love Song. Up next, the Marshall Tucker Band's Doug Gray returns with Jerry Eubanks plus Dickie Betts from the original Allman Brothers Band. I'm Redbeard, in the studio for Southern Rock Gold, Part 1. The Allman Brothers Band has always had one of the greatest white blues singers ever in Greg Allman. But when guitarist Dickie Betts submitted the song Blue Sky in 1972, Greg deferred to Betts as the singer. It was a decision that would open the door for the Allman Brothers Band's biggest hit a year later. Here's Dickie Betts.
Well, you know, wasn't it that I hadn't ever sang before? I sang in other bands before that, but I just thought Greg would have sang it well, and Tom Dowd and Greg and everybody else in the band said, no, you got to sing this. So, you know, we went ahead and did it. But the first song I sang with this band. You know, I thought that Greg should sing it, but when the producer and Greg came to me and says, no, you know, you need to sing it, well, you know, I wasn't uncomfortable with that at all.
Lord,
From 1973, the biggest hit of the Allman Brothers Band's long, illustrious career, that's Ramblin' Man. It's included on Southern Rock Gold. Here's its composer and singer, Dickie Betts.
A lot of that Ramblin' Man, Blue Sky, Jessica, that kind of writing is a strong Western influence on my part. But then when you go to Elizabeth Reed or some of the other stuff, or La Brea, see, the Western swing thing doesn't really have anything to do with it. The Western swing big bands, you know, they were just like the Benny Goodman Band, only they had the more Western flavor. They were real interesting bands. They did a lot of twin guitar work, three-part harmony between the steel guitar and the two lead guitars, and most of them even had horn sections.
And it was that very thing, Jerry Eubanks' saxophone and flute, plus the jazzier and twangier sound of the Marshall Tucker Band, that should have prevented any comparison between them and the Allman Brothers Band. But that didn't stop some rock critics who should have known better. Here's Jerry Eubanks with Marshall Tucker Band's Doug Gray.
There was an element of us searching for our own identity there.
Yeah.
There was a little bit of that. We were the baby Allmans, you know.
Yeah.
But, and us being young, cocky musicians, we didn't like that, of course. But at the same time, it was true. Well, in a way, it was, you know. We thought, because we opened a lot of shows for them. They were already pretty popular, and we were just starting out. And I think they gave us a big boost. If it hadn't been for the Allman Brothers, it would have been harder for us to come along.
It would
along.
Have taken years longer for us. And see, that's what I'm saying. You know, we pinned this thing as we were going to do it forever, so we had to get real good. But Allmans were Greg... And all those guys were—they just not musically, but they just said the things to make us do better. You know, like, man, you know, this, y'all so good, man. You get out there and bust them, you know, and that made them play good. To me, that was one of the best bands in the world.
Really?
I mean, that original band was the best band in the world, the Allman Brothers Band. I mean, they could take on anybody in any kind of music. And smoke them. All they had to do was be exposed to the Allman Brothers Band.
By the middle of the 70s decade, Capricorn Records head Phil Walden had defied the conventional record business wisdom of basing a record label in New York or L.A. and built a Woodstock Bearsville of the South in the little town of Macon, Georgia. Here's lead singer Doug Gray of the Marshall Tucker Band.
It was such a nice thing to go down there and go to one place. It was a place where all the musicians could go to, the restaurants that were in Macon, everything. Everybody in that town catered to make everybody, all those musicians, happy, because it was going to be like a World's Fair was coming to their town because of all the influx of the money, which it eventually did happen. A lot of musicians bought houses down there. You know, it's just like, here comes the money. So all these people were really treating musicians nice. Dr. John was there. He'd be rehearsing in another part of the studio. It was just so exciting. It was just like you could look over the whole area and it would just glow. And it wasn't just something that I was drinking, you know.
Or smoking.
I mean, we would spend 18, 20 hours at a time in a studio down there that was spaced. It was designed like a spaceship, you know, on the inside. Every time that you left, it was kind of funny. You'd see the place where Otis Redding used to work, you know, or you'd see where Little Richard had walked around. And you'd see those places, and you could go stand out, and it was like people were trying to help you get better. There was times you would think that there were a lot of drugs and alcohol that went on through there, and there was. But you cut something, it meant something to the whole part of this Macon, Georgia, what it was. Phil Walden was king. There's no doubt about it. He knew how to what to do about things. So he continued on with that, you know. And needless to say, that lasted for a great deal longer than anybody ever expected it to.
Well, the train, the grinder switch is running right on time, and the Tucker boys are cooking down in Caroline. People down in Florida can't be still when old Leonard Skinner's picking down in Jacksonville. People down in Georgia come from near and far to hear Richard Best picking on that red guitar. So get around,
Now gather round, chillin', be down. Well, just get down, chillin', get loud. Well, you can be loud, yeah, and be proud. And you can be proud, yeah, and I'll be proud. You will ever, because the South's gonna do it again and again. But he sure can play. And there's CZ Top, and you can't forget that old brother Will is getting soaking wet. And all the good people down in Tennessee, you're digging Barefoot Jerry and CDB. Well, gather round, chill and get down. Well, you can get down, chill and get loud. Well, you can get loud, him, be proud. Well, you can be proud, him, be proud to a rebel, cause South's gonna do it again. Yes, it is.
Charlie Daniels Band, from 1974's Fire on the Mountain album originally, now one of 36 songs on Southern Rock Gold. Charlie's right, the South is going to do it again, right here next week at this same time, when Doug Gray and Jerry Eubanks of the Marshall Tucker Band, Lynyrd Skynyrd's Gary Rossington, Henry Paul of the Outlaws, all return with me in the studio and are joined by 38 Specials Jeff Carlisi and Donnie Van Zandt, plus Steve Earle for Southern Rock Gold Part 2. I'm Redbeard.